Hello, everybody. It's Terry, and I'm excited about tonight. You guys know I get really excited. We have our guest speakers and the people we get to chat with and pick their brains, because this guy tonight is, man, he's amazing. I've just been sitting here reading his bio, and I think you guys are going to be blown away. So let me look at the time just to see how we stand. We've got about another 30 seconds or so, and we're going to get started. So if you are on the webcast, as usual, let me know that you're there. Please type in and say, hey, it's me, I'm here. So I'll just know to be able to check over if, you know, we're going to open up for questions at the end. So if anybody has any thoughts or ahas or questions they want to share with us, please do that. And then, of course, I'll be checking on the conference lines to see if anybody's on with us. So I think we're going to get going. Make sure you turn off your phones, turn off the TV, do whatever you need to do, and get settled in, because this is going to be a really fascinating call. So let me get the recording going, and then we will get going. So welcome to, this is our first divine level call in 2017. So for those of you who have not been around and you've been off for the holidays, we're so glad you're back. And for those of you who are maybe listening to the recording afterwards, we're glad you are at least taking the time to listen to the recording if you aren't here live with us. So thank you for being here. Okay, let's just get started, because I met Daryl at a conference a couple of months ago, and ended up just chatting with him and just fell in love with this guy. He sparkles. I know he's going to love me for that. He sparkles, and he's very wise. He runs a lot of female energy, girls. You know how we talk about that male and female energy. And no, I'm not saying that he's feminine. He's got that feminine, sacred energy about him, that he's very nurturing. He's very kind. He's very wise. So let me tell you a little bit about him. Daryl Gurney, I'm just going to read a little bit from his bio, because there's so much here. So I'm just going to pick and choose some things that I think are really interesting, because everything is interesting. Daryl is a life changer, executive coach, licensed spiritual counselor, consultant, and career advisor, and he's been supporting people in all walks of life for over 28 years. He's the founder of The Back 40 and CareerGuy.com. He's written several books and edited professional journals on the topics of finding one's passion, midlife pursuit of purpose, effective relationship building, and career transition. In his most recent work, The Back 40, Seven Critical Embraces for Life's Radical Second Half, it's an inspirational guide and companion for designing a fulfilling second half of life. The Back 40 Infuse, that means INFUSE program, supports midlifers to create the second half as the best half, inspired by radical purpose under the premise that the best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine, is what he says. As a licensed spiritual counselor, Daryl has studied multiple disciplines with many renowned leaders. He speaks, now this is what I found really interesting, and I'm going to pick your brain about this, Daryl. He speaks and leads workshops and trainings for community and spiritual organizations, professional associations, and university and MBA programs such as Harvard and USC. I find that really interesting, and I want to see, you know, what you're doing there with them as far as, are you bringing spiritual information, because I just find that really cool. And then he's got this thing called Play Game Coaching, which has empowered leaders to become their truest, most powerful self-expressions, producing extraordinary results in an innovative spirit of play. So I don't know about you guys. Man, it sounds like this man is the kind of man you want to marry. I don't know. What are you single ladies out there? And Daryl, I don't even know if you're married. So welcome, Daryl Gurney.
Well, you'll have to.
Are you
you'll
there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Hello? I can hear you now.
Okay, good. Yeah, you'll have to talk to my partner about that marriage stuff. She's been married twice, and so she's been holding off, but maybe if you get enough calls coming in for me after this, you know, it'll give her that impetus, you know.
Well, I love it. Wow. What an incredible bio you have. You know, I knew when we met, Daryl, that I immediately liked you. And you remember we sat out there on the patio at that hotel out in Manhattan Beach and sat there and chatted. And I just really connected with you and my girlfriend, Melinda, that was there. We just all really had this wonderful connection. And I love what you're doing for midlifers, but not everybody here in our group is a midlifer. A lot of them are, but, you know, some of them aren't. And so just tell us a little bit about what your work, and you've got this thing here that you talk about, and you say that what if the first half of life was only R&D, meaning research and development. I love that. I mean, I could go on that and talk about that forever. So will you just kind of expand on that a little bit?
Sure, sure. And, yeah, I think it was one of the – we know how that law of attraction stuff works, so – no accident that I came out there just to say a little goodbye to Melinda, and we all sat there talking for an hour. So,
I know.
Yeah. Just perfectly the way the stars line up, you know, when we keep ourselves open and available for it. So, let me just say something. You said, you know, everybody's here is not in their back 40. Look, I'm pretty clear, Terry, given what I know about you, that anyone who's around you is mature in soul and spirit enough to take on the conversation that we're bringing out for, you know, primarily people in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Because sometimes it takes, you know, people who've been on being on the planet for a while, being beat up a little bit, going through what they call midlife crisis. We actually call it midlife opportunity. But I guess what I'll just say is that anyone that would be on a call with you, I'm sure, can benefit from these ideas. And when we talk about the front half or the first half of life being R&D, that kind of came to me. I mean, I'll keep it short, but at 40 years old, I was sitting in my meditation chair watching my son sleeping in my bed because my parents were sleeping in his bed downstairs because they had come to lend me some more money to fight a $500,000 custody suit. And as I was sitting there watching my 8-year-old son sleeping, I thought, you know what? My life's not amounted to much. You know, that kind of big L that you have showing up over your forehead. You know, I just felt like, wow, I'm a loser. I don't have anything to show. And you know, I'll just call it a download. And, you know, sometimes, you know, we're blessed enough to get those. Download just kind of came to me and said, you know, whatever's come before doesn't matter. What matters is what comes after. And it really, that idea just kind of came to me that the first half is R&D, research and development. That, you know, when we, and if you look, you know, when we're 20, 22, you know, going to college, you know, we don't know what we want to do yet. We're, you know, we're just kind of shooting from the seat of our pants. And so, you know, we're really just discovering who we are, really. I mean, especially when we first get away from home and all the cultural influences and the familial influences. And so what it kind of came to me is that first half is where we're really discovering who we really are, what our real passions, proclivities, tendencies are. You know, a lot of times we choose careers based on either what the parents wanted us to do or maybe what they didn't want us to do. We resisted or, you know, in other words, we're doing all these things to figure out who we really are. And when we get to that midlife point, or like I said, for some of your listeners who may be on the fast track, then it's really about, now, how do I take what I've discovered about who I am and put that into purpose? And so, you know, I'm of the belief, given, you know, what kind of downloaded through me and what we've seen impact other people that have been coming into this back 40 work, is that the second half's the best half. You know, Frank Sinatra says, you know, the best is yet to come. You know, they won't it be fine. But if we can really get tapped into that purpose that we're here to fulfill, it's like there's no end to that second half. We, you know, we don't have to wind down. You know, society says you kind of, you know, you're cooking and then you get to 40s, 50s, 60s, you start kind of winding down. We say bull. We say you have yet to do what you came here to do, and we keep playing. That's a long answer, but...
So can I ask you a question real fast?
Yeah, you can.
How did you get, you know, you're in that moment of feeling like you were a loser?
Yep.
And then you get to this wisdom. What was the transitioning? I mean, you know, because you were looking at, okay, well, my first half was research and development, and the first half was the first half. But, I mean, were you already doing spiritual work at that point when you had that divine download and you said, God, I'm a loser, and then, you know, this is just the past, and now the next 40 is going to be different? I mean, was it just a moment, or was there some kind of transition that happened?
Well, I had done a lot. I mean, I think we all, you know, preparation is 99%, right, of the peak mm-hmm. experiences. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. I was already a licensed spiritual counselor, you know, probably had done just about every personal development program under the sun. And, you know, we're cooking along. And yet, you know, I'm sitting here in a $500,000 custody suit. It's like, you know, what does that say about me? How did I end up in this? You know, and I'm probably not the only one on this call that has gone through those really, really, you know, challenging times. And so what did occur was, once I had that inspiration, once I got kind of given to me that, and by the way, did you know that it's a quote from Freud, not from Freud, from Carl Jung? It was funny, after I started building this idea of the back 40 and I'd already written the first manuscript, someone sent me over a quote from Carl Jung that said, the first, up until 40, you're just doing research. Up until 40, you're just doing research. So it was like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. maybe. But to answer your question is, I had done a lot of my preparation, and then over time, it wasn't like it happened immediately. This was 2002, so if anyone's adding it up, I'm 54. But this was 2002 whenever that came to me, and for the next 5 years, I was still building out of that hole. I mean, I had massive debt. I had a lot of self-esteem bruises, because in the family law system, you know, dads in the family law system, you know, still have a hard time. And so, but mm-hmm. over 5-6 years, as I continued to build out of it and build my esteem, and then I actually wrote the book in 2008. I'm writing the bookstore version of it right now, which will come out this year, mm-hmm. but I wrote the original manuscript, and it really was a download. And I'll tell you what, it was to heal me. When I sat down to write that, you know, and it all kind of just came out, these 7 critical embraces for life's radical second half kind of came out, but it served to heal me. And then mm-hmm. I started turning other people onto this idea. And you know, now we have programs, and you know, we actually floated this out to do our first program a couple years ago, my partner and I, and we saw that this really lands with people. And so I won't say it was an overnight thing. I will say that with commitment and persistence and doing all the spiritual work that we do on a regular basis, you know, we're happy to get along a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time, a little bit at a time.
Right, right. So what are the, I mean, because I'm really anxious to hear, because, you know, what I hear a lot with everybody is, I don't know what my purpose is.
Yeah.
And so do you have a way that you can look at your back 40 or whatever you've come through and say, okay, how do I look at this and then determine what my purpose is? Do you have a process for doing that, or is it just something that it has to be like an aha moment?
No. Absolutely, and that's why I was able to get the healing that I did. One of the first embraces, so we say there's 7 critical embraces for life's radical and purposeful second half. The first is your past, because you know, a lot of us who've done a lot of spiritual work, done a lot of personal development work, we know the terms being complete with the past. And we know the term closure or even forgiveness. You know, that's a high-level way of dealing with the past. But all of those terms refer to something happening to you, something that you didn't want that happened to you. And so many of us still carry around, you know, attitudes or beliefs, or, you know, where the past has shaped us, or we believe that it's limiting us. Like, if only my parents had been this way with me, or if only I hadn't been molested, if only I hadn't, you know, and again, all of these are, quote, horrible things that happen to people. And one of the things, first processes we do is give people an opportunity to look back and, first off, you know, and I know this is rough territory because of what I just said about people, you know, someone being molested. And when we can look back and look at the blessings, like, who did we get to become? What did these things that happened to us serve to, how did it serve to form us? How did it serve to shape us to now be able to do what we're doing, or to now be able to have the sympathy, not the sympathy, but the, you know, empathy and the, you know, ability to be aware of things, you know? Like I had, when I went through this process myself, you know, there are things from, you know, when I was 4 and 5 years old that I've still, no matter how much personal development work I've done, I've kind of carried it around that, oh, that really had an effect on me that I'm still trying to get over. When I can go through this process of looking at the blessings, and then, crazy enough as this may sound, look at myself as a mad scientist that was running an experiment. How did I create this experiment so as to give me this opportunity to grow? Why did I pick the perfect players? How did I pick the perfect parents? How did I pick the perfect person so that I can start to take responsibility? I can start to take a view of, rather than being a victim to my past, that what if I caused it all for my highest and greatest good so that I could go do what I'm now here to do? And I can't go through the whole process here right now. It's just, it's kind of a long process. But what you come out of it with is what we call self-expression directives. So if you can look at these lab experiments that you ran, and if you can look at how you put it all together with the perfect players, and you can look to see what it now tells you that you're here to do and to be, then yes, there is a process here that kind of points the way towards your purpose. It kind of, and so in other words, everybody's been doing these lab experiments. It's just that they haven't necessarily looked to see what came out of the lab. Is this making sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, I have a big belief. I've written about this in my book, The Enlightened Mom, about, you know, we're here all, like, all in a big play, and we're in spiritual agreement, and who are your partners in the play?
Yes.
Who are you playing with?
Yes.
So I get it, but I love your visual of the mad scientist. I mean, that's hysterical when you think about, oh my gosh, okay, I'm going to go over here and create this chaos, and then over here I'm going to create this. And what a great visual! Oh my God, that's fun. I'm gonna keep that one in my hat. I love that.
Well, what in effect in the end where we're going? Okay, where we're going is that if we can become responsible for our past, not like it happened to us, but that we're causing the matter, that we, and again, this is dicey stuff, okay? I know there's some horrible things that have happened to people on this call, and it could be crazy for anybody to even think about, oh, how am I responsible for that? So I'm not saying fault, and I'm not saying blame. But when we, and this is just a model, okay? We're not saying it's true. But when people can utilize this model to gain some power over what happened to them, then guess what? If you can be responsible for your past and you can have caused it, then you can cause your future to be anything you want it to be.
That's powerful. You guys take that in. Because, I mean, this group is a very spiritual group. That, I mean, we, you know, they know they're walking a spiritual path. They know that they're the co-creators of their life, that we talk about spiritual agreements. We come in to have these experiences and stuff. But what you just said is so profound, Daryl. I mean, it is really, really profound. So say it once again. So if you could create your path.
If you can get to a place of being responsible for your past and your present, but if you can get to a place of being responsible and therefore cause in the matter of it versus being a victim of it, then you get your power. You get the power back that you thought was taken away from you from those things that happened. And therefore, with that say that you always had over the past and the present, you get to say the way the future is going to be. I want to say one other thing. I want to add another thing to it here, Terry, because I'm actually writing. The first version of the book was just dense. We used it as a source document to create our programs, but I'm creating a more, you know, simplified bookstore version. But one of the things that's coming out as I rewrite it, and I think your listeners will appreciate this given their spiritual bent, is that if we entertain the idea of oneness, and it's great that we can go, you know, promote oneness and pray and stand in oneness, but if we have it that there's separation and that there's victims and that there's perpetrators and there's good guys and bad guys and right and wrong and all that stuff, all of that just buys into separation, okay? And so through this kind of process of being able to own it all, to really own it all and own it all as a creation for what you came here to do, as your laboratory to design you for what you came here to do, then you can stand in oneness. You can stand in the spiritual contracts. You know, you can stand in that it's only one thing going on here and we're all here to support each other and play with each other.
No matter how bad it looks, too. I mean, because sometimes it can look awful. We had a horrible incident yesterday at our local grocery store where mom had her little three-year-old. She was loading her car, and in the back it was a little SUV. He was standing right next to her, right by the car. And a guy's right across from her, I guess he was under the influence of some sort. He had been slumped over because witnesses saw it. He woke up and he hits the gas and rams the car in front of him, pins the kid between him and the car, and kills the little kid.
Oh, my God.
And it was awful, horrible situation.
Yeah.
But because I live by what you're saying, Daryl, I was talking to a friend today, and because, you know, of course, in our small community, everybody's talking about this thing. It's been all over the papers, and so it was a horrible, horrible accident. But my thought goes to, wow, that little kid, what a spirit he is, playing his part for his mom to wake up. And what a spirit this guy is who was slumped over at his car and in the perfect moment woke up and slammed his car into this kid.
Yeah.
And I went over there today because they have balloons and they have teddy bears on the parking lot where the little kid died. And I'm sitting there and I'm just sending him light. And I was asking his spirit, do you need me to help you to go on? Do you need to help me to help you to cross over? And he said, no. He said, I'm good. I'm just here. I've got to hang out for a while to be here with my mom to help her.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, because it was exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It was about, you know, that we are all in this as these, you know, these mad scientists creating these experiments. And I know that this mom, even though she feels like it's the worst thing that's ever happened to her in her life, that she is in agreement to have this happen. That's what you're saying, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, and again, we don't, you know, look, you're a highly evolved consciousness, and your listeners are playing at that level too. So, you know, we have to be careful that we don't do spiritual bypasses. Of course, in the world in which we live, in this, you know, this, you know, what we've created as separate beings, and I've got a name and you've got a name and you've got that body and I've got this body, you know, we've got to operate in this world. And so there are the, you know, there's the sadness, of course, that we first feel when
of
we
course.
Hear a story like that. Now, when we step above, yeah. though, and when we step into the place of, you know, if we can follow the signs and if we can learn from the what occurs, not like learn our lesson. So it's not about lessons. It's not a harsh universe that's giving us lessons. It's just part of the learning process that we all came in here, you know, to do together. So, you know, you bring up a
right.
very, very poignant story. And I mean, one time in our Infuse program, and what Infuse, I heard you spell it out a minute ago, it stands for Igniting a New Formula of Unique Self-Expression. So that's mm-hmm. from this kind of, you know, work where we can look to see what are our self-expression directives from life, what life has taught us. You know, then we can ignite a new formula of unique self-expression.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the participants, her son had died in Afghanistan, and, you know, she had really carried that with her for years. I mean, even her physical body, she just let herself go, you know, go. She didn't care how she looked. And again, we don't judge people by how they look. I'm just saying that she was just, you know, letting it all go. And one of the things that she saw when she took it on from this perspective, and it was tough because when you take these really, you know, I can talk about the things that happened to me when I was a kid, but hey, that's like pocket change compared to, you know, what you just described, right? But when
mm-hmm.
you can at least start entertaining that, what if, you know, what are the blessings? See, this is the biggest thing sometimes. What are the blessings? People go, you're crazy. There's no blessings in this thing. And guess what? The longer you stay there, the longer you stay a victim. As opposed to
right.
if this mom, right, if this mom, number one, can forgive herself, because that's going to be the biggest thing she's going to have to, you know, get over is just
absolutely.
The self-condemnation.
Yes.
And then
right.
look to see, who knows that she doesn't go out and, you know, make a difference for young moms, you know, who are a little unconscious out there. You know, who knows what
mm-hmm.
they partnered up to do, her and her child, you know. On a
right.
spiritual level.
And that was my feeling too. That was
yeah.
my exact feeling too, is that, and of course, you know, I mean, all of us were so saddened by this, and you do experience the sadness and the feelings and the compassion for the family, and you know what they're going through, and you
right.
don't know what they're going through. I mean, but you can only imagine. And
right.
But then to go into that place of recognizing, and then to be able to stand at that space and ask his spirit and could feel his presence there and was talking to him, and for him to tell me, no, I'm not ready to go on because I've got to hang with my mom for a while because I've got work to do with her. It was pretty
what a
cool.
blessing. What a blessing you were and what you were able to offer in that situation. And look, Terry, let's just say, you know, whatever it is that's occurred to you in your life that had you get to the place where you could then be able to do this. Do you see what I mean? Probably.
Absolutely.
There were some pretty damn tough things that occurred that got you to this
yes.
place of openness and ability to serve in this way. See, and again, it's not a Pollyanna viewpoint. It's just that, well, what if the universe, what if we do live in a loving and supportive universe that is always conspiring for our highest and greatest good?
Mm-hmm. I love that. You guys take that in. He's seen these little tidbits of information that, you know, we may have heard him in variations before, but the way he's saying it is like, ooh, that just sunk in real deep. I love that. So what's the next critical embrace? You've got seven. I don't know if we have time to tell us all of those. I mean, we've got time. So
sure.
What's the next one?
Well, the next one, as I kind of mentioned there, is your presence. Because, you know, what's funny is, you know, where is the present? Is it now? Is it now? Is it now? No, most of the time, whatever we consider the present is something before this very moment, right? And so a lot of people, you know, myself included, you know, when this was being written, and even to this day, it's funny, I just wrote up a whole new analysis of a present situation that has really been, quote, haunting me for the last nine months. So I'm not going to say that, you know, I'm, you know, above all this work. I'm doing this work, right? But the point is your
right.
present is very often the past pretending to be present. So in other words, very
wow,
often.
Wow, that's something to really think about. So, how do you know if you're present? I mean, okay, so you're making me stretch my mind a little bit right here. Okay, so let's just hold on for a second.
My job.
Because one of the times when I get feel like I'm really present
yep.
are when I'm outside walking on this mountain that I live on.
Yep.
And where I'm feeling the energy of the trees, and I'm looking at them, and I'm seeing them with such a different perspective than I would be if I were driving by.
Yep.
And I'm breathing that energy. So you're telling me that's not being present? So what is present?
Not at all. Nope, I didn't say that at all. Now, let me
ask you something. Okay, because I'm thinking, wow, this feels like I'm being really present.
No, it sounds like you are. I think I want to join you on that, all right? Tell me, though. What is something, and it's, you know, as vulnerable or open as you want to be right now, what is something that's going on in your life right now that you would not like it to be that way?
I am too busy right now. I did some poor planning, and I've got too many projects going on. So that is something that I would like to be a little different, and I have learned my lesson.
Okay. Well, you know, and we could look at that. And is there anything, you know, down and dirtier than that? Is there, and again, you probably live such a, you know, elevated life, maybe there isn't. But my point is this, is that very often in the present, we have bitches and moans and gripes, okay? So we all deal, you know, we can all look back at our past and say, oh, you know, if that hadn't happened or blah, 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 blah. And, you know, we now say, hey, there's a way you can requalify everything that's happened in your past to see what it's pointing to you for your future. You can own it completely. Well, same thing with the present. You know, rather than being a victim to anything right now. And, you know, if there is anything in your life right now that's not as you would like it, guess what? What's the lab experiment you're running right now? You know, we kind of even get into this whole scientific method. You know, there's a hypothesis, and then there's setting up the lab, and then there's coming up with your findings based on the way, you know, it's running. So in other words, the next embrace is to take on that you're also causing the matter of your present. You're causing whatever's going on, and if you feel a victim to it at all, you just haven't dug in enough to see or to take on what you're doing this for. Because, again, if you're not a victim to anything, you get more power, okay? If you can own that what's going on in the present that you say you don't want, and you can see why you're running that lab experiment right now, and it probably, and a lot of times, is a repeat of a prior experiment that you never got your results from, or you didn't stop to get the lab results from that past event. And you know what I'm talking about. People create patterns, right? Same kind of relationship,
sure.
Same kind of job. So the point being is we give you the you want to take on the present as in just as much cause and responsibility as you take on the past. The third embrace is your gifts and your talents. A lot of times people get on in life and they've been on this kind of track, but they haven't done an inventory, you know. And if you're going to go into a second half, best half of life, then it's good to do an inventory of where you stand. Because a lot of the talents and the gifts you've developed were not things you got through school, were not things that came through traditional training. Like, I'm an expert on the family law system right now. Okay, I didn't ask to be, but I am.
Okay, I bet you are.
And so that's another embrace, is to really take the time to do an inventory. And we have some really unique ways to look at, you know, what are the unique talents and skills that you possess right now that maybe you never even planned to have. Okay, then the next embrace is your values, because it's also important that you don't go into, your second half, best half, go into, you know, this unique self-expression with obsolete values. And, you know, those things change over time, right? You know, I had a certain set of values 10, 12 years ago when I was a single father raising my son. I had a certain set of values 30 years ago when I was a single guy running around L.A. So an assessment or an
I bet they were vastly different.
Exactly. Which is the point, right? So, you know, you're laughing. It's very suspicious. Anyhow, I'm
My ladies, our tribe is used to it, okay? They never know what's coming out of this mouth, but yeah.
So then the fifth embrace after your values is your initiation. So, you know, this idea of midlife crisis is really bandied about a lot through society, right? Midlife crisis, there's going to be the husband who's going to leave for the younger gal, or he's going to get his Corvette, or, you know, whatever the version of that is going to be for the woman. But there's, you know, stuff does happen, okay? It's even proven astrologically that there's a certain returns that occur when you're around 42 or 45, and stuff happens. And it's not like stuff doesn't happen in all the other times of life, but there's something about the big things that happen right around that 40 to 50 time that can kick people into this thing called midlife crisis. And very often people can stay down or stay shaped by that. If I hadn't gotten the download that I did, I could have, you know, been, you know, wearing that scar. As a matter of fact, I grew a goatee. Right after the custody suit, I grew a goatee, and I didn't realize for years that that was my badge. I had a badge of what he did to me, right? So the point being is that if you can take on that it's a midlife opportunity versus a midlife crisis, and that it's an initiation period into the broader, wider you, into the more open, you asked, you know, what is it that had, you know, that impacted me? I think a lot of times when you're at the bottom, there's nowhere to look but up, right? That's what rock bottom is about. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times when people get to that midlife, what they call crisis, that's the real opportunity to look up. And I mean that in several ways, you know, because, you know, there is, you know, whatever people's perception of something greater than themselves can really start to seep in, you know, whenever they're in that place. The next embrace is your purpose. And what's interesting, Carrie, is that when people have done this work on these first, you know, embraces, your past, your present, your gifts, your values, and your initiation, your purpose kind of falls out of that. It's interesting when you take all these self-expression directives that have come out of all these serious and significant things that have happened to you, and you put them all together, it almost is like a divining rod, you know, telling you where to go, what to do, what to say, to whom, you know. And then the last embrace, just to wrap that up, is a presence. And, you know, just like we just talked about, is like when you're at rock bottom, you look up, you're open. When a presence can start to move through you, when you really have this sense of your purpose and a relationship with the presence that, you know you're being carried, you know you're being directed, you know you're being guided. That last embrace is what really puts the wings, the wind beneath, you know, your wings, so to speak.
So when you talk about presence, you're talking about what some people call source, what some people call God,
exactly.
What some people call, you know, universal life force, whatever. Yeah. So.
Exactly.
But, you know, I mean, look here, I want to just play devil's advocate with you for a second, because if you're moving into that in the last phase. I mean, and granted, you're doing this process all in one fell, you know, like probably over a short period of time. But for me, it was moving into that presence of feeling the God presence first that helped me move into the other stuff. So do you ever see that happen?
Well, of course, everyone's going to have, and, you know, this isn't necessarily a linear, you know, kind of thing. I mean, these are seven embraces, mm-hmm. you know, and people will come
okay.
in.
So it doesn't happen one, two, three, four. Okay.
Well, no, we take people through a process, but, you know, it's a little difficult to have a mature relationship with a presence if you still feel a victim to what's occurred to you in the past. Do you get what I'm saying?
So we first
want to work on the people gaining a sense of responsibility, like cause, like say in the matter, and whenever they're not a victim, they can actually, you know, take on, wow, what if there is one life going on here? And what if it's been using me and going on through me? And what if I just got more conscious of it and I developed a more mature relationship, you know, with a presence?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that, a more mature relationship. So when people are going through this whole thing, and do you find them having big shifts? I mean, when they can really start embracing what they learned from the past or, you know, what their experiences were and... because I'm sitting there just, you know, when I hear somebody speaking and when you're giving such good points and things to think about, I think that's where I see people struggle the most is letting go of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, what do you see the most of?
I agree, and that's why, and again, I'm going to be humble about this because, number one, it's part of my self-expression directive. That's kind of what my past has told me, and I will say that when I sat down and this kind of went through me or downloaded through me, that was where it started for me. You know, that was the embrace number one, because, you know, people live as if there was something bad that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I forget, it's in one of my books, Never Apply for a Job Again, which is on the career side of things. But there's this story of, and I'm sure you've heard it before, where, you know, the guy has a farm and his son falls off a horse and breaks his leg, and the neighbors come by and they say, oh, terrible thing that your son broke his leg. And then a few weeks later, the army is coming together to go to war, but he's got a broken leg, so he can't go into the war. And the neighbors say, oh, how fortunate it is that your son has a broken leg. He can't go into the war, right? In other words, it's like, what's good or bad, you know? If we can, you know, requalify and review what has occurred for us in our experience and be owning of it, thankful for every bit of it, it just releases so much of our consciousness to then point forward, because we've all got these little ballasts and these weights that are holding us down that we feel are limitations by what's occurred. If we chose it and we did it for a reason and we see why now, then, hey, we've got all of us to move forward.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you something about, you've used this term a couple of times, your unique self-expression directive.
Yeah.
Explain what that is.
Okay. Let's see. Let me just give you, I guess, a quick example. You know, one of the stories I talk about in my book is just something that happened to me when I was a little kid. I was 4 years old, and my dad, you know, I have it that my dad was very grumpy and he was overly critical. And there was a particular thing that happened one time where as a four-year-old, I just, you know, was terrified and scared. And as I walked through that process and I looked to see, oh, well, what were the blessings that came out of my, quote, overly critical dad? Well, one of them was I became a sensitive person. I went this spiritual route. I started tapping. It's funny, you talk about at the very beginning of the program, I have this feminine, you know, I'm definitely, my girlfriend will tell you there's, in so many ways, I am really masculine, and I do have a fully orbed feminine. So I've got a fully orbed masculine and a fully orbed feminine. What's great, I'll just throw this in, you didn't ask for this, but it was a great piece of wisdom that I have a prayer partner, she's a minister, and we've prayed for like six years a couple times a week. And before I met my partner, she said, Daryl, she said, you have this fully orbed feminine and a fully orbed masculine. See, I was a single dad for 15 years, so, you know, I knew what it was to take care of everything, too. She said, you need to find a woman who's got a fully orbed masculine and a fully orbed feminine, and if she wants to play the feminine and you want to play the masculine, y'all got it made. So, in other words, I just throw that in as a little bonus, is that, you know, we can be evolved, and there are other guys like me out there. There's guys who have, you know, the spiritual awareness. It's funny. God, I'm just going off so much. But I do have another book in me that I'm going to write one day, though. And the book is called Stop Being a Snag and Grow Some Balls. And what it stands for, is, you know, this whole snag idea is sensitive new age guy, right? And so a lot of times the spiritual guys come out as sensitive new age guys. And what I mean by balls is B-A-L-Z, bold, authentic, loving zeal. See, if you look at Wayne Dyer, you know, Wayne Dyer had balls. He had bold, authentic, loving zeal, right? So, anyhow, I'm beating around the bush on your not meaning to, but what happened is by that occurring and by me being more afraid of real masculine dominant energy, I became more of a sensitive type, more of a spiritual type. And therefore, some of my self-expression directives right now, as I said, are humility, authenticity, self-love, I'm trying to think of the, you know, in other words, when I did this kind of analysis, there were about four or five little pointers saying, Daryl, this is the way you should go. Based on all of this occurring, your purpose involves authenticity. You know, I don't know how many guys you've had on your calls like this that are sharing these kind of things, but see, that's the result of my self-expression directive, which is authenticity, self-love. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does, and I love that. And I bet it's when you tie that in, because I'm always thinking about people and their gifts and their purposes. So when you're tying that in, your unique self-expression directive to your purpose, is there a little, you know, teaser you can give everybody here that would help them kind of say, okay, well, what is my unique self-expression directive? I mean, I'm like you. Mine's all about authenticity. Mine's all about self-love. Mine's about passion, compassion. You know, I see those things in myself, and I see how those play into my work. So, you know, if you're, I'm assuming that all those things are a part of the equation to help you figure out your purpose, right?
Yeah, they are.
Right.
And
so can you give them a little teaser or something to chew on right now on that?
Yeah, my book's coming out probably in a few months. No, that's
perfect.
Well, no, I mean the point being is that it's a 7-step process. And so, you know, the first step is look for the blessings in what occurred. Find that serious and significant event, that horrible thing that happened, and first come up with 20 blessings. And that'll be the biggest shift even right there, is because people say, you're crazy. Okay, well, the longer you entertain the idea that I'm crazy, that there aren't blessings in this for you, then the longer you're a victim to it. So the first step is come up with 7 blessings. Then look to see what might have been. When you look at those blessings, when you look at the results of what occurred, what might have been a lab experiment you were running. I came up with several hypotheses for my thing that happened when I was 4 years old. One of my hypotheses was, can a boy raised with low self-esteem ever really learn to love himself and be a contribution to the world? Right? That was a possible hypothesis that this mad scientist wanted to run an experiment for. And by the way, Terry, you know at Stanford and all these other institutions, they just come up with questions and then they run lab experiments, right? They just come up with hypotheticals.
Exactly.
You know, it's just like, oh, let's run a test and see if gorillas will, baby gorillas will go to this one, you know, that has milk, this stick figure that has milk, or go to this one that feels furry, right? They just come up with lab, experiments. So I'm just saying, if we play with it, and I look to see what might have been a hypothesis I was running, and where, how did I set up the lab perfectly? How did I pick the perfect dad to run that experiment? How did I pick the perfect culture to grow up in? You know, blue collar, hey, I grew up in Texas, Friday Night Lights, tough. You know, I was thought to be weird because I wanted to be in the band rather than to, play Little League football. But my point is I picked the perfect environment to run that kind of experiment. So, you're kind of, you got this mad scientist pretty sharp. Then you look to see what were the findings. So if you take those hypotheses, what did you see? Now, when you look back, can a boy raised with low self-esteem learn to love himself and be a contribution? I'm thinking so. So I'm seeing that the findings, and then whenever I then look at the findings and I look at the overall experiment and I say, okay, so what direction does this point me to? What are the directions? Like, in other words, if this was saying, so go this way, then I would say, oh, it's pointing me towards authenticity. It's pointing me towards self-love. It's pointing me towards self-compassion. It's kind of a, look, we have a design to the process, and there's a lot of blank canvas and painting as you go. Does that make sense?
Sure. I love that. I think what it's really interesting is when you take on the vision or the visual of the mad scientist and you're doing experiments and then you're saying, okay, so this was the hypothesis. What was the possible question I was asking and what was the finding? That's what you're saying, right? I'm hearing
exactly.
It back
you're
to you.
Right. You're right in my first chapter. That's
okay.
Excellent. Yeah.
Okay. Good. I'm glad I can help. But when we can look at it from that perspective, I call it seeing the gift, retrieving the gift.
There you go.
Yeah. It's just for me that's the way I look at it is, okay, so what was the gift? Why was I in this experiment? I don't use the word experiment, although I have often felt since I was a little kid that planet Earth was a big experiment. I've had that feeling since I was a little bitty kid. It's like, okay, well, I'm here to have this experiment, and then we'll see what happens. But I love that, and I think that's really good for all you guys ladies listening, in that if you can see yourself, okay, if I'm this, I love the idea of Einstein. I've got this wild hair going on, and I've got my lab coat on, or maybe Dr. Frankenstein, or was it Dr. Frankenstein?
Thinking of your
exactly. So you're thinking of where, what's going on around me? What is it that I've created? But what I love what you've really said, you've given so much really wonderful input, but what I really love what you said early on, and that was that whatever you created in the back 40, you can create whatever you want in the next 40. And because when we go into awareness of that we are spirit first and that we are here to have these experiments, we get to decide what the next experiments are going to be, right? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, what I'm saying is you chose it all. You chose it all, and sometimes it takes that first half of unconscious running of all these experiments to actually wake up, if we do, and we know that everyone doesn't, and we just pray for them, and, you know, but if we chose it all and we put ourselves here for those reasons that this soul wanted to come in this time to express a certain thing, then it just gives you freedom when you can really realize that everything you set up this far has perfectly established you where you need to be to do what you came here to do. And one of our main mantras is you have yet to do what you came here to do, no matter what accomplishments you've already had. And believe it or not, we had a 72-year-old participate in our program a year ago, and she said, I feel like I can now go win my second half. Okay, so she's going to live to 144. But the point...
Good for her.
Yeah. The point being is you have yet to do what you came here to do, and you chose it all, and if you can get freed up from any ideas that there's anything holding you back, or there's any societal, quote, wisdom that says that you're going to start being less of whatever as you get older, we say that's BS. That's belief system, and we're here to turn that around.
I love that. So I have another question for you, because I'm sitting here looking at some of the notes I have for you, and it says what the acronym BADASS allows for you in bringing love. What is that? I'm just dying to know what BADASS is.
Well, it's interesting. I spoke to the E-Women's Network out here in L.A. beginning of last year. And, you know, sometimes women are a little bit apprehensive of that term. Like, what's a guy talking about BADASS? You know, I have my own acronym for that. And I say that if women really take on that their best is yet to come, and that this second half really can be their best half, then living in a badass way helps to move that forward. So the B is bold. So starting to move without hesitation, even into danger, you know, boldness and whatever. Look, I coach women. I love coaching women. I coach men too, but I don't know. Maybe it's because of all this design that I put myself through. I really connect with and support women in ways of self-expressing and really playing as big as they want to play. And a lot of times I tend to attract women who are developing their voice, you know, and they have lots of reasons and things that have occurred that have them not expressing their voice. And so I'm on a mission for women to really use their voice. And I think with all the changes going on in our country, and I mean, it's like a lot of my clients, it's been interesting. I told them after some recent developments in our country that concerned them, I said, okay, so if this was a lab experiment, what's it telling you to do? And it's like, well, I am going to be using my voice. It's like, good for you, right? So the first, so the B is bold.
I can't tell you how many times I've heard that.
Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes things have to happen.
So the B is being bold.
B is bold. A, astute, being keenly discerning. You know, really knowing what's real and what's not real, you know, and I think, you know, women grow into this naturally because there's a lot of BS out there, right? But, you know, growing in the area of really deciphering, you know, discerning what's real and not real. Dynamic, you know, energy and vitality is critical. And look, I'm going to go out on a limb here. A lot of times women don't take the care of the body temple. They don't, you know, have it either be functioning in its optimal way or have it serving them to have them feel in the highest self of esteem, right? So the dynamism, mm-hmm. the energy, the vitality is critical. The A, the next A is what I call ass-kickingly sympathetic, okay? And what I mean by that is, you know, sure, you know, we can't lose heart, but at the same time, we gotta, you know, be playing for keeps here and playing big. And, you know, I like this idea. Look, I don't know if it's true or not, but I think there was a Mykonos, supposedly the island in Greece, was a culture really run by women, you know. And somewhere along the evolution of, you know, human beings on the planet, and again, I don't know, I've just read this in my spiritual stuff, but that one time women actually pretty much ran the planet, and then somehow men mm-hmm. started, you know, kind of trying to turn that around, and so created this whole, you know, idea that women had to be dependent on men and the agrarian society and all that kind of stuff. My point being, though, is that the more women that we can get in leadership positions, they're gonna make a better world because they got the heart and they got the ass kicking ability to boot, right? The next S,
I agree.
Is what I, yep. Self awareness. Okay, so. And again, I'm speaking to the choir here with your crowd, but really looking within rather than without, you know, really, you know, getting tapped in to that source and to that presence, becoming self-aware with the big S, right? That big S meaning the connection beyond your particular body or your particular piece, becoming self-aware. And then the last S, I say, is self-care, because you got to put on your own oxygen mask before you'll be able to help anybody else. And I think right. that's just a critical thing for all women to remember. And I see it all around me a lot of times that there's a lot of accommodating, but guess what? You got to take care of yourself. You got to make sure that you
right.
are, you know, you got all of your pieces flying so that you can make the contribution to others. Anyhow, that's what I have as badass. What do you think about it?
I love it. I love it. I mean, to me, you were describing women leaders of love. I mean, that's really, you know, the women that are in this group, that's really how, you know, we try to bring that attention to them. And, you know, with the biggest intention of is that when you live your life as a badass, the way you've described it, that you contribute to the world, but even more importantly than just contributing is that your example sets the tone for other people to do the same. And because we watch people and learn, and because we women are the nurturers on the planet, that we see when we deny ourselves, then other people learn to deny themselves because they watch us and learn. They think, oh, this is love. So when we say, no, we're not going to do that anymore, we're going to be badass women, we're going to be dynamic, we're going to be astute, we're going to be bold, we're going to be, what did you say, ass-kickingly, self-aware or sympathetic. I mean, when we do those things, we set examples for other people to do the same. Mm. And then, to me, that's how we create a planet that is really loving and whole. And I love the way you gave that acronym. You like acronyms. I like them too. And I love it. I love what you've done with that. That's awesome. Well, what I want to do is I want to just see if anybody, I mean, you've been so thorough about everything. I don't know if anybody has any questions. I find a lot of times if we have a speaker who is really, really thorough that our peeps are a little bit quiet, but I want to just give them an opportunity to ask a question. You guys, if you want to ask something, just say hit *2 to raise your hand. And then if you're on the webcast, you can type in really fast and let me know if there's something that you want to say. In the interim, while we're just waiting for anybody to pop their hands up, Daryl, is there where can they find you? Tell them where they can find you if they want to learn a little bit more about the seven critical embraces for life's radical second half or whatever it is that you can share with them that maybe they could get more information about what you're doing.
Sure. We actually put up a little gift just for your folks tonight. My assistant organized it. Yeah, so if y'all would like to go to the back 40, F-O-R-T-Y, theback40.com/free. And again, this just got put up within the last hour. Your folks can get a top 10 tips for a radical second half, as well as a free ebook. It's an ebook that we put up a month or two ago on Kindle called Birth of the Back 40. So the back 40, F-O-R-T-Y.com/free. And, you know, after you grab those, spend some time on the site. Go click on the blog. I got to tell you, my partner, Alexandra, is just such an expression of the back 40. We have so many inspiring blogs there. There's blogs that she's written about her voice. And no more Little Miss Good Girl, I think, is one of her blog posts. And, you know, a lot of blog posts for myself and from our wonderful right-hand person, Alicia. So check out the blog, see some of the programs that we're doing, and, play with us in any way you can. Because I got to tell you, people like your peeps are the kind of people that will help turn this conversation around about what the second half of life is really capable of producing.
Yeah, it and I love that. I love that because we do have a lot of people who are at that second half. I have a lot of people who are empty nesters. That are, you know, trying to figure out what's next. You know, what am I doing next? And that's a big one for them because when you, especially we have a lot of mothers. So
yeah.
When you've been a mother and you've spent your whole life dealing with your children and giving your life up for your kids, and then all of a sudden you're going, okay, now what? What do I do next time around? You know, I mean, I see that a lot. So,
I only laugh.
One more time, you guys.
I only laughed a second.
Go ahead. I was just
going
to say one more time if anybody needed to raise their hand
because
I'm not seeing any. Star 2 if you guys want to ask a question or if you want to say an aha. But they're just being quiet. This happens when people speak. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say I was laughing because you talked about the empty nesters. Alexander wrote a blog article a couple months ago called Free Bird. So you can look at it like empty nest. Or you can look at it like free bird and what's possible now if you do,
right.
You know, take on that, hey, you did do a damn good job raising those kids. And like, guess what now? What is there for you? Where's the contribution to come out of you now? And you're a free bird to pursue that, you know?
Exactly. And I know that when my kids all got back or went in, you know, into college and got out of the house, I had my moment. But you know what I was really thankful of? I was thankful that I had spent time cultivating my spiritual life over the years and finding my gifts. And, you know, I wrote The Enlightened Mom when my kids were still at home. But I spent that time, and then I would still be mom. When the kids came home, I would set things down and be mom. But I loved the fact that my life was very full without it depending on my children.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of times people, they miss the boat. They forget, you know, they don't realize that if they would have, you know, they make some time for themselves to love themselves, then it's not quite such a hard transition in the end. We got a hand raised right here. Let's see. Here's Renee. Hey, Renee, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. We're glad to see you here tonight. You got a question or a comment?
Yay. Well, I do have a question because I'm the nutty professor that keeps running the same experiment. I keep repeating this cycle over and over again with different people, and I'm like, what is the lesson here? Because I want to learn it and stop this madness. So from what I'm hearing, Daryl, it sounds like your program and your critical embraces steps could be very helpful to me.
Well, I hope so. And let me just say, you're not the only one running repeat experiments, okay? I think to a great degree, if we haven't, in a discerning way, the way we kind of lay it out here, if we haven't really analyzed, and again, you know, we can talk about lessons. I just think there's a little bit something punitive about the word lessons. It kind of comes from a culture where there's mistakes, and therefore we learn lessons. So I guess I would just offer to you, Renee, yes, I think it could, and, you know, hopefully you'll go grab our, you know, offer that we gave a minute ago, and plug in and, you know, check out our programs, check out our book. I would just offer to say that there are directives that are in there, and, you know, would love to, you know, would love to have some time at some point to, you know, support you in breaking down the lab experiments. You know, you are an incredibly tenacious mad scientist. So kudos to you, you know?
Yeah, I'm
Renee,
never,
did
never,
he nail
never,
you?
Never
That's great. That's wonderful.
But I went off, I definitely went off the gerbil wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, get off that wheel. Well, you know, and again, I think, you know, when we talk about what Daryl's talking about as far as embracing these things is just also consciously making the decision of saying, I am choosing to see this with different eyes, because it can be a habit that we've learned through our lifetime of seeing things as a victim. And so, in my opinion, we have to consciously make a decision to no longer see things as a victim. We have to say, okay, that is victim mentality. What is empowerment mentality? And empowerment mentality is when I choose to see this as a gift. And when I choose to hold that energy of saying, no longer am I going to stay in blame, no longer am I going to stay in resentment, no longer am I going to stay in these. We can feel them, but then consciously give thanks to say, okay, this is taking me to a new place of empowerment, and I'm going to embrace it. So I think that's what we have to consciously do. I know I had to learn that because I grew up in a family that was all victim mentality. Our society is victim mentality. This is why when we just went through all the political stuff that we've gone through, people are pointing fingers. There's a lot of victim mentality in our society. And so when we're raised with that and we watch it on TV, we read it in stories, we see it everywhere, that it's easy to get embedded in our brains. And so it becomes a habit, especially when we've been doing it a lifetime. So it's something that we have to consciously become aware of to move out of it. Wouldn't you agree with that, Daryl? Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, I totally, totally agree. And, you know, I'll just say again, we don't have, quote, the answer. What we do have is a method, and the whole objective of our method is to give people an access to moving beyond victim, okay? You know, it's funny. You know, I've spent a lot of my life as a career coach, too, and working with people in their careers. And, you know, it's interesting. Somebody will be laid off or something, and they're in this victim mentality about it. And again, you know, we can apply it anywhere. But I'll say, okay, good. I'll say, now, I want you to come up with 20 reasons why this is the best thing that could have happened to you. And they'll say, oh, you're crazy. This is terrible. I'm not going to have income, and, you know, my kids are in college and everything. Okay, so I want you to come up with 20 reasons why this is the best thing that ever happened to you. And I'll just keep saying that until they start. And it's interesting, what you're talking about, Terry, is a conscious muscle of moving the mind. And once they start, oh, well, you know what? Actually, this is going to give me some more time with my kid before they go off to college. Or actually, you know what? I've actually been entertaining the idea of a business, and somebody's been wanting to talk to me about a business for a long time, but it's like I've been too busy. You know, but the point being is, you know, we are going to get what we focus on. We know that from basic law of attraction. And so learning to build the muscle of turning our minds towards being cause in the matter rather than at the effect of life is a muscle worth building.
That's good. What do you think about that, Renee?
Yeah, I love it.
Cool. Do you have anything else you want to ask him? Are you good? Are you good? Are you complete?
I'm good.
Thank you, darling.
Good to meet you, Renee.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it. Anybody else have a question? Star 2. I'm going to take Renee's hand down. Anybody else have one last question? Now's the time, or it's going away. Well, Daryl, let me just flip over here to the webcast because I have to always flip between my pages to see if anybody is typing anything. I think we're going to call it a day, and you have been so much fun to listen to and so insightful and wise, and your partner is a lucky gal. It sounds like she's got a great guy in her life, and your kid has a great dad, it sounds like. So we're really appreciative of that you're bringing that energy. I have a man like that in my life. You talked about the female and the male orbs. I would say he's got a lot those orbs going on too. And some days he's the masculine and I'm the female, and some days I'm the male and he's the female. So,
it all works back and forth. It all works.
I look
it's
at
all
him sometimes
by agreement.
I'm like, you have more Do what?
It's all by agreement.
What did you say?
It's all by agreement.
I look at him some days and I'm like, you've got more feminine energy or you've got more estrogen than I do. We just laugh about it. And because I have actually learned from him a lot of gentleness over the years. I was one of those women who took on that masculine energy to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking that was going to make me thrive. And so I've spent years now chipping away at not being so heavily into the masculine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even to the point when I was a teenager, my mother used to say, swing your hips, you walk like a boy. Because I just really ran that masculine energy. So I am very blessed to have a man who is very kind and gentle and very soft-hearted. So I love that. I love that because he's taught me to be more so. It's been a huge blessing. So once again, so everybody can find you, it's theback40.com/free for the free gift. And
exactly.
Daryl, what we'll do is because this goes out as a replay for those who don't make it live, and we'll make sure that we put in the replay email that link also and invite them to grab it from you.
That'd be wonderful.
So, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. You've been just a wonderful guest and so informative. And I know if everybody could give you an applause and a standing ovation, they would. So we're going to all send you love right now and just lift you up with that and receive that if you will.
I do.
So I
thank you, Terry. And I just want to acknowledge
we're good
you.
Tonight.
I just want to acknowledge you. I will play with you anytime, anywhere. Your essence and your commitment to empowering women and to up-leveling the vibration on the planet is hugely attractive, much less that wonderful little Southern accent, which makes me feel at home. So anytime, I'll always be with you.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you, Daryl. All right, everybody. Good night. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you in our Q&A calls next week. And then we do have coming up in a couple of weeks, we have our new Worthiness Quotient course coming. So if you haven't joined us for that, you'll want to jump on our webinar. You'll get your emails in your inbox. So have a wonderful, wonderful week, and we'll see you guys soon. Thank you again, Daryl. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.